Welcome to Consciously Cannabis. I'm Carly, host of Consciously Clueless, the podcast bringing you this series. Together with guests, I'll be exploring cannabis through lenses of sustainability, mindfulness, and plant-based living. Bonus content from Consciously Cannabis will be available at patreon.com/consciouslycarly. Take a hit, or don't, all are welcome here, and let's get lit.
Happy to be here and talk about being conscious and cannabis, some of my favorite topics.
I love that. We're in the right spot then, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you a founder of CBG Gurus, correct?
So the titles I gave myself are co-founder. I've got one founding partner and I'm the CEO right now of the company also.
Awesome. So can you tell listeners a little bit about the company and we'll start there?
For sure. So the CBG Gurus, we established our company in 2020, but we actually had our first outdoor cannabis crop in 2021. And I guess the idea behind establishing the CBG Gurus was Jake, my business partner, and I were both fresh out of college and kind of had to decide whether we wanted to get jobs or try doing our own thing. So I actually grew up on 13 acres in Harwinton, Connecticut, and the property wasn't being used for very much. So after establishing the company, I spent a large part of my senior year of college like really planning for our first outdoor crop. And then after graduating, basically moved back home to Connecticut and put 100 plants in the ground outside. That was my first big outdoor. I had a really good mentor in college, so I had some experience growing indoors in tents, but that's a totally different ballgame than really anything at scale or just like outdoor cultivation compared to indoor in general. And then that first summer in 2021, we also built out our lab. We do ice water extraction here in-house because we really wanted to be as vertical as possible and keep everything in-house as much as we can. And nobody in the hemp industry really doing ice water extraction. We wanted to try that out. And we also are big believers that's the healthiest, purest, best form of cannabis extractions. We wanted to employ that for ourselves. So we built out the lab, grew that first crop, and did the ice water extraction, and then created our product line, which really launched at the end of that year, 2021, and going into 2022. So we're still a relatively young company, but we've had a really exciting past couple of years. And going from that first year, growing 400 plants, we grew 800 plants last year with a ton of produce and did a couple other fun things. I still like to think about every single year as a new opportunity to try new experiments and try to really perfect our cultivation style and our system that we're developing here.
So I thought maybe it would be a good idea for listeners to get this out of the way. CBG Gurus, CBG might be a different configuration of letters, I'm guessing, than some people have heard. So could we circle back to that?
Absolutely. So that is a key point that I actually missed in the introduction. Back in the summer of 2020, when Jake and I were really trying to figure out what we wanted to do, if we wanted to do something, what the plan was going to be, the CBD market was already starting to be a little bit flooded. Prices for biomass were like already pretty low, and we weren't planning on growing hundreds of acres here. So we weren't planning on just selling it as biomass wholesale to some other producer to make their products.
Is that what biomass would mean, is selling to somebody else?
Correct. Yeah. So that's what a lot of the large scale farms, like we'll say on the West Coast or Colorado, will do. They'll just grow hundreds of acres and mow it down with a tractor into big sacks, and then it gets shipped off to big extraction companies and the CBD that you find in your lotions that are in Walmart or just like all the big brands. It all has to come from somewhere. So a lot of the people who don't grow their own rely on those suppliers. But I wanted to grow my own, basically. So we had to figure out how to make that work from the perspective of building a brand. That summer, I actually discovered CBG And we ended up ordering some CBG smokable flower online from another farm, as well as some CBD smokable flower. And we tried them both. And this was our first time experiencing CBG. And we were sober when we tried it initially, and definitely felt the effects more than we tend to feel CBD. It is totally not intoxicating, but we do like to think it's a little bit more psychoactive, almost like how caffeine is psychoactive but non-intoxicating. It makes you feel something in your brains, especially. And the mantra kind of that we've come up with over the process of building the brand is that we like to say CBG has more of an aware, uplifting focus type effect. So we really love to use it during the daytime just to help with mood, concentration, anxiety, inflammation. It does a lot of great things, that's for sure. And again, in trying to build the brand, we felt we could focus a little bit more on this. And it's been a interesting process educating basically every single person that we sell to as to what CBG is. But we're happy to do it, really happy to be out there educating everybody. And we're big believers in the product, is why we decided to start building our brand around CBG. And over the past couple of years, we've definitely developed a more complete product line. We've got CBD and we've got some really great nighttime products as well. So, yeah, but that's how it started and what CBG is. People don't know that they actually call CBG sometimes the mother cannabinoid because in cannabis plants, basically all cannabis plants make CBG first, and then the plant, through fun plant processes, will turn the CBG into all the other cannabinoids like THC or CBD. All to say, even weed plants make CBG first, and then the plant turns the CBG into THC. And it's been not that long. It was, I think, back in 18 when the first CBG dominant genetics really hit the market at a broader scale. So that's when you really were able to begin cultivating plants for CBG instead of making it in a lab using chemicals or whatever. We grow the plants and they make it and accumulate it thanks to some great breeders. So yeah, CBG is really great. We love it.
For so many reasons, the way that marijuana and cannabis have been talked about culturally, the war on drugs, all the bullshit that we know, right? All of the cultural things surrounding this. I think, especially in the last few years with like CBD and CBG, people are like, but what is everything? And I'm sure, like you said, you have to educate people because there's so much that we've treated it as this crick wild drug that we haven't really culturally even, and I more mean, I guess, Western culturally, dove into all the different ways, all the different cannabinoids, all the what that means for the body and how it reacts. And it's so exciting to see that we're moving in that direction. I interviewed someone and they were like, I can't wait for the day that you go somewhere and you say, here is what's bothering me. And someone says, this is the exact strain, this is the exact reaction, and this is what your body is looking for. And I think we're moving in that direction, especially when you talk about these different strains. Do you feel that too?
And I feel like in all cannabis, consumer education really needs to be first and foremost. And I think that's something that I've realized trying to build a brand in the space. And really, that's just like anybody building a brand in a space. That's what I would recommend because a lot of people, not only do they not know about CBG, but they don't necessarily even know the difference some intoxicating cannabinoids and non-intoxicating cannabinoids, or a pretty big, I'll say, issue that we're facing right now in the hemp industry is some manufacturers are, through chemical processes, converting CBD to other more intoxicating cannabinoids like Delta-8, THC, and that is technically legally considered hemp. So it just becomes a little bit difficult, even maybe for a more educated person to understand sometimes when somebody says, oh, it's a hemp product, But then some hemp products that are sold on the market right now are absolutely going to get you high. Like, that's why they're being sold. That's not exactly the brand that we're trying to build. We totally recommend, even a lot of the times, mixing our products with your THC products because we think it really does enhance the effect. That's generally how I consume CBG. I mix it with my THC flower and just smoke them together. It helps me be in where I want to be, but be able to be focused and level-headed and still productive. And I think as people get more educated, they will realize that even more. And hopefully, as the marketplace in general mature, the information that people really need to begin understanding these things will be more available, and people will begin to understand the importance of these things. And when I say these things, I mainly am referring to basically like ratios of cannabinoids and terpenes. Those are the things that get analyzed right now, largely in cannabis when it gets tested. And the different combinations are going to make you feel different ways. So when people understand, hey, this is why Blue Dream makes me feel this way, and that's a way that I really like to feel, then maybe they can begin looking for other similar strains, say if Blue Dream isn't available, or they just want to try something new that are going to make them feel a similar way because it has a similar chemical composition, because that's really what's triggering all these effects in us. But cannabis is just such a complex plant that literally every single plant is different, unless you're, you know, taking cuttings of the exact same one to make sure that all the flower is exactly the same. And then it's grown in the exact same place on the exact same year, which could maybe be an advantage to indoor cultivation. You can really just replicate exactly what you want. But yeah.
This conversation is only growing for sure in the United States, but I think internationally around cannabis and hemp and the sustainability and the possibilities of hemp. I think everybody I've interviewed for this Consciously Cannabis series, when we start to talk about hemp, just get absolutely pumped about the sustainability possibilities with using a product like hemp. Can you speak to that a little bit? Like, why are people in sustainability spaces so excited about hemp?
To put it extremely simply, everything can be made from hemp. So I think that is the answer that like gets everybody super excited.
And it probably makes a lot of big industries really freaking nervous that you can make out of
That's
hemp.
why they made it illegal back in the day. Especially hemp was non-intoxicating. They say all the military parachutes and ropes and everything used to be made from hemp, and then it got made illegal. I think because it was threatening, say the paper industry, just as one example, those guys had the money at the time. And of course, money influences the politics as it goes. So they made hemp illegal, and it's finally starting to come back around. But now, of course, there's just so much stigma behind it that people still don't necessarily even want to touch anything related to hemp.
The hemp industry is what would have happened instead of the plastics industry. Can you imagine?
I can't imagine. And hopefully, just realistically, it wasn't that many years ago. So there is the potential for that to begin happening. And I've got some super intelligent friends in all sorts of circles. And I'm sure one of them will be able to find some grubs or some mycelium or something to eat the plastic as way faster than it would ever decompose. So I have faith in us as humanity. I try to as much as I can. But hemp is definitely super exciting from all aspects. Here, we right now, at least, just really are growing for the flowers. So we don't really, we're not making paper or like clothes or anything. Right now, again, we use our stalks basically just like to make biochar, or we'll just chip them and layer them back on top of the soil to keep it fully circular and make sure that nothing's going to waste. But industrial hemp is grown more like corn. It's planted normally with tractors, and they mow it down with tractors. It's planted like 1 foot by 1 foot, and you're just growing a telephone pole stick because you really want to maximize the amount of wood and bark that you get.
Right.
And that is the most effective way to do that. Instead of here, our plants are spaced typically 4 to 5 feet on center. We're trying to grow more bushy plants because we want to maximize flower production. But in doing that, we don't make as much wood or bark. But that's not what we're trying to do here. I would love to see a future where there's like way more manufacturing plants for hemp products, and I could just like ship my bark to them, or they would come pick it up, give me 5 cents a pound or whatever. But unfortunately, right now on the East Coast, that infrastructure doesn't really exist too much right now. So
Does
there's
it
not really even
anywhere?
any. Yeah, it exists. It's starting to come more online in the West Coast, like
Okay.
West Coast area. There definitely are people out there growing for fiber hemp. So they do need processing facilities for all their fiber hemp. But not only do I not necessarily have the hundreds of acres to do that here, but it doesn't make sense financially for me to ship semi-truckloads of this hemp across the country to these manufacturing plants. So I really love the idea of all the products. But I will say the hemp product I'm most excited for is hempcrete. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. No, so I'm about to blow your mind then. Yeah, so again, to be brief, because I could probably spend a whole hour talking about just this, and I am not nearly as educated in the like, yet as I'd like to be. I'm hoping about to take a class to learn how to really make the stuff with some professionals, maybe within the next year, so I could start doing construction, some hemp construction of my own. But basically, the general idea is you take hemp hurd, which is actually the interior woody part of the plant. The bark on the outside can be stripped away and used to make other materials like rope, or that's what's used to make clothes and stuff too, normally, fiber, basically. So the interior woody part is what you use to make the hempcrete. And again, I'm not super sure on the exact ratio, and it's probably situationally dependent, but basically you just mix the shredded hemp hurd with lime and water, and then you pack it. Or there's really interesting, fun new technologies that are starting to come out so that you can spray it. And then it just has to cure. And after curing for at least a couple of weeks or a couple of months, then it just turns into basically concrete. Yeah, it's really amazing. And it's like some of the most amazing aspects of it is throughout its lifetime as a building, the material actually sucks CO2 out of the atmosphere. And so that's like cool from an environmental perspective. And then from just like a home building perspective, I think mainly it's the lime in there, but it's like totally bug repellent. Like you're not gonna have termites in your walls. And then also it's totally fire retardant. So like I've seen videos where people take like a blowtorch to the wall and maybe there's like a little char spot, but like nothing happens to the structure or the wall or anything. So I think there's really a lot of potential with that as a construction material in the future. The one downside is it's not structurally supportive.
Is that gonna hold shit up?
Yeah, no, but how they get around that is in wood structure. And again, there's different methods, but the most traditional method is pack the material around wood structure. Normally, the walls tend to be at least 6 to 8 inches thick or more, depending on the insulative value that you're trying to achieve. But you can use other materials for your foundation and then you build your wood structure. I think it's still like super innovative and there's a lot of applications. It's really just hit the US. You're in construction, you haven't even heard about it. So I think it's something that I'm interested in and it will be an interesting process, something like that permitted when people have never heard about it before. But these are the hurdles that we're gonna have to come over to make the world eyes, the amazing potential of hemp. You can make insulation with it too, and like plaster, you can make plaster board, really everything you'd a house except for the concrete for the foundation.
Right.
could be made from hemp, basically.
I think your statement of, okay, putting it simply, everything can be made. And that's it's like a throwaway, but it's so true. The more and more I learn, and I feel like I'm just really go on the last couple of years going from someone who smokes weed to like being intentional about learning about the plant and possibilities and hemp and all of it, like as a whole, versus not just someone who smokes. Like, I'm so eager to see what hemp can do in driving away some of the industries that are so detrimental to the earth right now. And I know that your business has a commitment to sustainability, and I think that's the reason you have the cold water extraction, or can you talk more about that?
Sure, yeah. I'll make one more point before we get into ice water extraction, because that's a totally different
Yeah.
offshoot. Just that maybe you didn't know from about hemp in a totally different avenue is for a seed. And the seeds provide a ton of like value. The seeds actually, I'm pretty sure, have all of the amino acids in them. Say make hemp milk or whatever from the seed or all the other goodies, or you could just eat the whole seed. Exactly. They're super tiny nutrient packed and provide us with a ton of super nutrient dense food, but it can also provide us with everything that basically all the materials in our world. And it provides us with ganja that we love to smoke and make other great medicines with. So I think that is a great set ice water extraction. One of the reasons why we make forms of ways to consume cannabis. It just is so flavorful, so mind-blowing. I'm talking about it in the marijuana regard right now, but hash rosin and hashish, they're just all. And it realized the reason why we're doing ice water extraction is, yes, to be vertical, but also ice water extraction because the lab currently, we renovated the entirety of our basement basically. So there our lab is right now until I can put up a fun new hempcrete building. A lot of the other forms of extraction are rather dangerous, risk or explosion. So there was no way that I wanted to risk blowing up my house myself, lighting anything
Fair.
on fire. And there was also no way that the town would ever approve said activity, or maybe even my property at all. So it's very easy to convince everybody, hey, I'm just throwing a bunch of flowers in an ice bath and bada bing, bada boom, I'll get the tomes and then make medicine with them. I'll say they were a little confused, as some people are when you talk about ice water, but it's safe and it was easy to get everybody that we needed to be on board, even if they had never even for the DCP here in Connecticut, never even heard of it, and they're the ones like regulating us on our extraction license. We had to teach them about it. It was a learning for everybody, but having a good variety of throughout my prior experience, I knew those were the types of products I wanted. Also knew it was going to make our brand unique in the space because, as I said prior, nobody else really doing it. That has maybe hurt us in some ways. The yields sometimes aren't amazing, but types of extraction. Just like everything is always a learning curve, of course. But I knew that's the type of lab that I was set up for a number of reasons. So that's why we pursued to geek out on you a little bit and educate the people about like how ice water extraction works and
And intimidate
why,
me.
yeah, why it's considered a solventless form of extraction compared to some solvent-based forms of extraction that use, say, ethanol or like butane are the most popular, or supercritical CO2. Those are probably the three most popular solvents for solvent-based extraction. So in ice water extraction, what happens is a say fire in, fire out. The best material that you put in is the best quality extract. So basically, if you're dedicating your nicest flowers, trimmed up or anything, it's just all nice flowers covered in trichomes going into the washing machine, that's going to make the best hash. And for ice water extraction, especially, the best extract comes from fresh frozen material. So when we harvest our plants for ice water extraction, we actually don't dry them at all. We cut the branches off and then we quickly do like a trim to get all the big, no trichomes. And then here on our farm now, we actually have a bucking machine, which saves us a lot of time at scale. So you feed the branch into this machine, and it's got some wheels on it, and it pulls it through and all get off when the branch gets pulled through. That saves us a lot of time. And then the flowers just go right into the freezer, and they can stay in there more or less indefinitely. They have to at least be frozen for 12 hours or whatever before they get extracted. And when we're ready to perform the extraction, we've got this big, basically washer machine looking machine. That's how I always explain it to the old lady. Like, it's just a big washer machine. That makes everybody like totally able to understand it and envision it. But it is, of course, engineered to us, so it's clean and whatever.
You're saying I'm like, I am a lady. I'm like, yes, keep dumbing it down for me.
Yeah, and I'm a pretty big like visual learner. So if I can like really see like what somebody's trying to explain to me, it's like helpful. So we've got our big washing machine, and when we're ready to do the extraction, basically what happens is here's a tip for everybody. I like to get my water super duper cold before I load it in the washing machine, so I don't actually have to put that much ice in the machine. I mainly do the cooling prior, and then I load up our cannabis flowers into the washing machine, and I fill it up with the ice cold water, maybe a little extra ice. And then basically what happens is there's an impeller in the bottom that just rotates and causes a vortex in the water. So at high speeds, it looks like a tornado type hurricane is going on in there because like a big vortex. And on our machine, we can control the speed and the time that it takes and all that fancy stuff. So basically, the nugs get spun around in the ice cold water. And what happens in this is because it's so cold, like 32 degrees cold, everything's pretty fragile. So what happens is the heads, trichomes, actually separate from the stalks of the trichomes, and the heads get suspended in the water. So they're just suspended in the water. And then when we drain the washing machine, we basically drain the water through some mesh bags that have different size holes, which allows us to collect different grades of hash. And basically, all the water goes through the bag and the trichomes get collected in the bags. And it comes out looking like a wet sand. And then, thanks to some new age technology, we use a freeze dryer, dry the hash. And this basically everything cool. It keeps all the terpenes preserved, and it makes it a lot rapid process as opposed to air drying. And it's a lot cleanlier, lots of benefits to freeze drying. So the hash gets freeze dried to get all, and then it gets sifted through to homogenize it, basically turn it into a nice even powder. And then for all of our hemp products, we actually mainly use this, which is called bubble hash, to make all of our edibles. Like our tinctures are just MCT coconut oil. That's the base oil that we use, and it's infused right with the hash. So each bottle of tincture has got like over 2 grams of hash infused into it. They taste great because it's like a solventless process, but taste just like the essence of plant, we'll say, in not a negative way. No alcohol flavor. It tastes like a negative connotation is it tastes chlorophyll-y, which is like green chlorophyll. Like, it just has a chlorophyll has a bitter taste to it that you'll know. And I guess an important ending point, the fact that the trichomes on the plant are where it really acts as a defense mechanism. Like, that's what it does for the plant. So when some bug runs into the plant, they'll get stuck on them, or they'll pop open some glands, and then they'll get blasted with terpenes in the face, and it scares the bugs away. You know, they don't like it. Like, truly, it's a natural defense mechanism for the plant. That's, you know, what the trichomes are. But for our benefit, that's also where they store a lot of the beneficial secondary metabolites, like the cannabinoids and terpenes that we're really going after from a medicinal standpoint. So the ice water extraction in particular, in my opinion, it allows us to really isolate that most desirable aspect. And then here on our farm, we actually use the rest of that green material that comes out when the washing process is complete to make fertilizer. And we add that to our plants. So it's a little bit, but they love it. And it creates a totally full circle process, which we love. It saves us money on fertilizer, which again, we love. And it's just absolutely, totally full circle, which makes me feel great as a producer in the space. And I, again, would love to relay a message because there's so much weight now in the cannabis, just like a little bit frustrating and upsetting because it is such a sacred plant that is, in my opinion, and back to the trichomes outside, because of the intensity of sun and the wind and the bugs and everything, the plants tend to make more trichomes. And the medicine produced from sun flower is, some will say, better, but it's definitely different than the compounds that get when cannabis, be it hemp or marijuana, is being grown indoors. So that's like a little bit of an overview of ice water extraction. Really quickly, I'll compare it to solvent-based extraction. Basically, what happens in a solvent-based extraction is you fill your tube with your flower. I think a lot of the times they like it to be fresh frozen also, or frozen minimally. So you fill your tube with flower. What happens is you essentially flush through the tube of flower. And in this process, everything, maybe some things more than others, depending on the solvent that you're using, but we'll just say everything dissolved into the solution. So now you have one liquid, whatever, solution mixture that has got all your cannabinoids and all your terpenes. It's basically, imagine an alcohol extraction or of whatever. You dump alcohol, and then everything gets dissolved in the alcohol. And then in order to get thing out of solvent, whatever the solvent is, you basically have to evaporate the solvent. And hopefully, and most machines do this, they actually recollect said solvent. But you shouldn't have too much waste in the process because you reclaim most of the solvent, how a solvent-based extraction works. So it's clearly different because the ice water relies on just the mechanical action of the water, basically, and I'll say the medicine, the trichomes, never get dissolved into the solution. They're merely separate from the solution. The water is evaporated. The water is also evaporated, but it never becomes one mixture. The trichomes are themselves, where in solvent-based extraction, everything is mixed into one solution, and then you have to evaporate it away. And I will say, there's definitely pros and cons to every aspect of extraction and growing and everything, and everybody has their lane. So I love to stay in my lane and just educate the general populace that doesn't have any idea about what lane they want to be in because they don't understand all the difference, which can be pretty complicated. But again, like, people need to understand, especially this is a medicinal product that they're consuming on a daily basis or multiple times a day. I think back to what's going to make the difference in the future and consumer education. Everybody need to be educated on the types of products they're consuming, how they affect them, and how to really that stasis that you want to be in throughout the day because everything is so different. You need to find what works best for you.
Do you feel like because of using the plant as medicine for your personal life, do you feel like that's lent itself to, at least what I'm gathering, correct me if I'm wrong, an attitude of trying to be more aware, to live healthy, and also this commitment to the earth? Do you think that the plant has helped in that perspective in life for you? Were you just born, I want to make a difference?
I grew up on this property, some veggies and stuff. You know, I used to play in the woods and stuff like that. I wanted to be stuck in a cubicle. Like, I could never see myself doing that. I definitely like a good challenge. I used to want to be a doctor, so I've always liked helping people. I think that's a lot of the driving force in this. And I also enjoy psychedelics, so this helped me feel more connected in general to everything. And I, as myself, definitely want to just feel good what it is that I'm doing. that put together made me want to challenge myself to figure out what I think would be the best way to grow cannabis outdoors, at least in my environment, because that's what makes me feel good. It feels like I'm doing the right thing. Like in every single industry, your dollar is your voice. So just support what makes you feel good. And I'm doing what makes me feel now, at least this is how we're doing things. And like I said, it was a challenge that I wanted to take on for myself. And it was the definitely easiest for us business. We didn't have a tractor, and I didn't want to buy a tractor. I bought an ice water extraction machine instead. And for the first 2 years, we dug hundreds of holes by hand with pitchfork. Finally, last year, we got ourselves an electric auger, drill the holes for us, and that saves a lot of time and a lot of backs. But we're just like making it work, and I have definitely learned. We grew 500 pounds sweet potatoes as an understory crop last year, so that's like an amazing. That was an experiment that turned out amazingly. We are a little bit unsure of our planting plan right now this year because of some things that are just like a little bit up in the air right now. But we might be growing twice as many sweet potatoes. It definitely worked out amazingly as an understory crop. Like that's one thing I've been really trying to figure out in my system is how to grow the most food, and we'll just say medicine, be it cannabis or herbs or whatever, or like culinary mushrooms or whatever, the most basically that you can get out of one space. So the sweet potatoes worked amazingly there as a great crop for the canopy, great for the great ground cover. And we got 500 pounds. We're trying strawberries too as like an understory. Put those in the ground last year. So, to develop, we'll see how hard they are to manage and keep in line. But again, the thought there is, yeah, I can harvest a full crop of strawberries, especially if they're June bearing strawberries, for mid-summer. We put our hemp in the ground in June or July. And when the hemp goes in the ground, it's like a foot tall and doesn't really take up any canopy at all. It's not full canopy until like late mid-August or early August, maybe, is when like the ground is pretty fully covered. And even then, there's still some nitration. Yeah, I want to figure out how to most optimally use my ground because I think business perspective, but it also makes me feel good. I love to grow good nutrient dense food for the good people of my local community and myself, of course. And again, I just really love the idea of a space. So like, why should I not be able to grow and tomatoes and peppers and sweet potatoes and herbs and flowers all in the same acre? Because I mean, at least, in my community, it's all needed right now. There's
Yeah.
not enough local food and farms and medicine for the people. I'm happy to be a provider, but also, I'm an entrepreneur. I gotta self a little bit too. It's just beautiful how it's together. And every year I look at it as like a new experiment. So we'll take everything that we've learned over the past 3, 4 plus years and apply here and try some new things and just hopefully continue to spread the word about just what it is we're doing. I think if you are a conscious consumer, then it's not that hard to see that we're doing something right, especially compared to anybody else who's fill in dumpsters of waste, like on a basis or whatever.
And with a past consciously cannabis guest, I asked, what's the intersection and sustainability? And he was, in terms of smoking weed, the first thing you should ask yourself is, where'd you get your weed? Who are you support practices did they have? And it's, I think that awareness is coming more and more, but this conversation really underlines that that can make a big difference when you are deciding intentionally and consciously where to get, of course, anything we take into our lives and into our space, but especially something we're taking into our bodies.
Absolutely. And I think that's like a really good point to make, especially now. The great thing about these recordings, they last in history forever, your web. So just make the point now that, yeah, find good brands and find good product because it's important now. People are to come online. Some states are making it more restrictive than others. So there might be a more limited number of options for small brands to support. Maybe you don't want to buy the absolute cheapest thing. That's the other point that for the future. So yeah, when cannabis goes federally legal, if it gets rescheduled, it's just going to be put right in the pockets of big pharma, which is not cool. But either way, the big corporations are going to come in. They're just waiting. They're waiting on the sidelines, and they're going to buy out all the big businesses that are already existing in the space. And I think at that history of cannabis, it's going to be more crucial than ever to have your brand and support them, because I foresee that they're just going to try to drive all the little guys by dropping the price to the floor to a point where some little guys might not be able to afford to. So, now and into the future, it's definitely important to be a conscious consumer and support a brand that you actually believe in, what it is they're doing, their message, and how they're cultivating, really. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, like, yeah, branding is great and important and cool. What corporation or nonprofit you're donating to, that's cool. Also, you're growing cannabis. Isn't that what you're doing? To get educated and start to realize the differences, be start picking brands based more around the cannabis and how it's grown, and really just like what you believe in as a consumer and your experience as a consumer in consuming all these different options.
Thanks for listening to an episode of Consciously Cannabis. If you're not ready for this episode to be over, don't worry. Every Consciously Cannabis episode has bonus content. Sometimes guests and I will smoke together. Maybe you'll see some of my friends and I toke up. Who knows? Go to patreon.com/consciouslycarly and get all the bonus content. And thank you so much for listening to this new series. If you enjoyed it, remember to hit subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast, share it with a friend, tell someone you know. Anything helps, and I so appreciate it. See you next time.